Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to We Get Results. I'm your host, Mary Singer Albertson. It's Tuesday, March 24th, 2015, and if you're joining me for the first time, We Get the Results, this program, airs the fourth Tuesday of every month at 1 p.m., and it's designed to inform listeners of major challenges that we are facing in the U.S. and globally. I discuss with experts how we can make a difference in our communities, in our country, and in the world. Because one person can make a difference if they know what to do and how to connect to something they're passionate about. Actually, we are the ones we've been waiting for because there's no one else coming. It's our generation's turn, and we need to act when we see injustice or need on someone's part that we can do something about. So every month I've been having a simple action that's discussed with an expert from Results or other organizations about making a call, writing a letter, or using social media to inform others. So today we have two very important topics to discuss. The first part of the program is focused on helping those in need succeed. We're going to be talking to some wonderful people from Child Safe Michigan and the Judson Center, both of their organizations are coming together to make a lasting and significant difference in the lives of children and families with a more collective and concentrated impact. So we're going to find out what they're all about, what they're doing, and what we can do to help these children that are in need and families that are in need also. And then the second part of the program, we're going to have a staff member from Results, which is a volunteer citizens lobby to create the political will to end hunger and poverty globally and domestically. And that will be Jocelyn, and he will be discussing SNAP, which was formerly called food stamps, which is the nation's primary defense against hunger. And there's possible cuts, huge cuts, during the current budget process right now. And he's going to give us an action that we can take if we choose to do so. So before I introduce the guests that are coming on, it dawned on me that I really hadn't told you much about why I was involved in doing this work. And so real quickly, I've been on the board of directors of Child Safe Michigan for 10 years, and I've been a mentor with a little girl through Child Safe for 3.5 years. I'm a retired speech-language pathologist, and I worked in the Michigan public schools for over 30 years. A large part of my work centered around the pre-primary impaired program, which is a preschool program for children with special needs. And then also I worked a lot in the Head Start program, helping children with speech and language difficulties there. So since I retired in 2010, I've continued to focus on children and families who need assistance. And these are the three organizations being talked about today, I can just say are all absolutely fabulous and are doing so much work to help children and families. So today these experts from Child Safe Michigan will be Elizabeth Brazilian, Director of Development, and the President and CEO of the Judson Center, Cam Hosner. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about them and then speak with them about what's been going on with Child Safe Michigan and the Judson Center. So I'm going to start with Elizabeth Brazilian, who I've known for about 11 years. She's a friend, and she's just a wonderful person that I can tell you all the many things that she's done in her life. She's had a multifaceted career while raising her children in New England. She owned a real estate development and interior design business, building condominium projects, a condominium hotel resort, designing interiors of multiple retirement communities, resorts, and commercial businesses. In the early 1990s, she founded Beam International, Incorporated. Beam provided products manufactured by Masco Corporation for projects she secured internationally. And in 1999, as a volunteer, she established the Greater Detroit Chapter of a national nonprofit organization that advocated and cared for abused and neglected children. She realized her passion to help needy children was more important to her than her corporate work. So in 2004, she helped to form a Michigan agency to provide foster care and adoption services to the greater Detroit area. From there, the agency grew and became Child Safe Michigan, a foster care, adoption, and mentoring program. And today, Elizabeth gives her time and efforts exclusively to Child Safe Michigan, who has recently become an affiliate of the Judson Center. She calls the third act of her life the most rewarding, helping foster care children to reunite with their biological parents when possible, or to find a loving, caring, and safe foster home, and best of all, a permanent adoptive home for children in the child welfare system. So as a director of development, Elizabeth works with board members, donors, foundations, and corporations to raise the funds necessary to provide the services needed for these children. And I can tell you firsthand that Elizabeth is the driving force that has guided so many of us to Child Safe Michigan and to the wonderful children who need help and they need guidance. So, Elizabeth, I want to welcome you to the program. Are you there?
I am, Mary. Thank you so much. And you are our angel. You have been our chaplain, so to speak, for our board for many, many years, and we all truly look forward to your inspirational thoughts that you give us when we start our board meetings and set our minds in the right place for why we're in that room and what it is we have to do. So you're an angel for me and a dear friend, and I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Well, thanks, Elizabeth. That's how I feel about you, too. You're an angel on earth to just so many kids, and so is Cam, and I'm going to introduce him, and then I'll let you guys talk about what's been happening. So we're also welcoming the president and CEO of the Judson Center, Cameron Hosner. And as CEO, he sets the strategic vision and mission of Judson Center, leading the agency's executive management team, assuring high quality overall operations, supporting effective board governance, and representing the agency on key industry and governmental groups and within the community at large. And with a budget of over $16 million and over 300 staff members, Judson Center continues to be on the forefront of human services agencies by delivering innovative and effective services that enable over 6,000 challenged children and their families each year to have bright futures. The Judson Center's high-quality services and programs span 12 counties in Michigan with additional statewide outreach. Cameron's entire career has been dedicated to social services and health care. Prior to his current position with Judson, he was president and CEO for Children's Hospital of Michigan Foundation, whose mission is to advance the health and health care of Michigan's children. Cameron was also the past longtime president and CEO of Vista Maria, Michigan's largest non-for-profit residential and community-based treatment agency for disadvantaged girls and their families. Cameron has been, before that, he was senior vice president of operations of Arcadia Services with a staff of over 400 people, and he has a BS degree from Central Michigan University, MSW from University of Michigan, and an MBA from Lawrence Technological University. He's a Harvard Business Club Detroit Nonprofit Executive Award recipient and a graduate of Leadership Detroit. He also serves on the board of directors of the Michigan Federation for Children and Families and is a member of the National Advisory Group of the Wayne State University Merrill Palmer Skillman Institute, as well as the Wayne State University Transition to Independence Program for Foster Youth Advisory Board. Wow, I can say is wow. That's just wonderful, wonderful experience that Cam's had. And I can just tell you, I've only known him for a few months, but in the short time I've known Cam, I've seen some fabulous traits in him. His compassion, his expertise, and his dedication to children and families who need help. So Cameron, we welcome you and all your expertise to the program. How are you?
Well, just terrific, Mary, and it's just an honor and a privilege to be here with you and Elizabeth and be a member of this long-standing effort by ChildSafe and to blend the wonderful work that both of our organizations, Judson Center and ChildSafe, are doing to rescue and restore children who are suffering from abuse, neglect, who are at risk of that, and also their families so that we can help them have bright futures. So thank you so much for having us all on your show today.
Well, this is very, very important work, and the more that we can get it out there and let people know what there is or what we need to help these kids, you know, the abused and neglected kids, we're actually saving their lives. We're giving them somebody who they can depend on. I've been mentoring, and, you know, it's giving, every children needs an advocate for them in some way. If they don't have a parent that's being an advocate in a good way, you know, we need to try to find people that will do that. And both of your organizations are doing just that. So I guess, you know, what I'd like to talk with you about, since this is such a new thing that's happening right now with Child Safety becoming an affiliate, how are you two making a difference together, or are going to make a difference together, Cam?
Well, I think most importantly, we have a common vision in that we want every child in Michigan to grow up in a healthy home with great schools, with all the social supports and friends, coaches, and mentors that they need in order to be successful and transition into adulthood as full contributing members of their community. And then at a practical level, we're going to be blending the very best strengths of both organizations at a program level, at a operational level, with our sites and facilities, and with our business systems, our information technology and HR, so that we can, in the most cost-effective way, have the greatest impact on the greatest number of children we can reach.
Well, it sounds like you have been meeting the needs of very, very many thousands of children, Cam, and you've been in existence since, what, 1920? What?
Yes. This was
1925?
The first year. 1924.
Okay.
1924, okay. Jensen Center was founded at the corner of 13 and Greenfield. We were originally the Detroit Baptist Children's Home, but of course now are not a religious affiliate organization and instead have become a diverse human service agency, as you noted earlier, serving multiple counties in southeast Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to have your 100-year anniversary pretty soon then.
Yeah, well, I'm really getting excited about that, although it's only about 9 years off. But I am. I'm very. You're right. We'll be coming on a full century of being that agency that made a difference for children who otherwise often felt hopeless and in many instances were homeless and needed permanency and safety to be successful.
And so many more are homeless now. It's getting more all the time, and there's just so much brought up about that we, you know, need to help those kids that are picked up by a bus to go to school at all different motels every morning and things like that are very sad. And so, Elizabeth, why do you think it's important for organizations to come together like this?
Well, you know, Mary, at this time, and you know very well because of your political work, you know, budgets are being cut everywhere, and particularly at state levels. And unfortunately, the welfare system seems to get some of the deeper cuts. And this is really a time where people that have the same goals and vision in their work and the same heart and compassion for children to come together. And, you know, we were a small agency, Child Safe Michigan, and we really needed to partner with someone that had all of the expertise and the areas of expertise that we needed to be able to grow what we care about. And that is, you know, serving the children at a level that really truly makes a difference, that we're not just, you know, giving them a place to house them while they're in the system, but we really truly, as you know so well, want to make that difference that they actually can grow out of this system or get into a permanent home and be very, very successful. So in order for us to do that at the child safe level, we really were looking for a partner that, you know, had the same goals that we did, that we felt could give us, you know, we're always out there looking for permanent homes for these children, that could give us a permanent home. And we have found that actually I feel very strongly that Judson Center was the only agency in the community that I felt was on the same track that we were on and that we really wanted to be part of this family. So Child Safe Michigan is an affiliate of Judson Center. We have found our permanent home, and now we're just marching forward together, bigger and stronger, because now we have the help of their, you know, human resources department, their IT departments, mm-hmm. their finance departments, their strategic plannings. I mean, all of it is just like a whole new exciting world to us. You know, we had mm-hmm. great social workers and we had great staff, but we truly didn't have the funds to have, you know, all of this expertise. And, you know, if you're going to do a business that lasts another 100 years, and that's what we need to do to get really, really strong to take care of these children, you need to have these kinds of partnerships. And I wish that, you know, more and more companies would think about working together rather than, I don't know, maybe holding their own turf or some ridiculous thing like that. You know, so uh-huh. we're very excited about this family and our growth here. And it's really starting to show already in the way that we can handle these cases for the kids and the additional resources mm-hmm. we can provide for the children. So we're very happy at Child Safe Michigan.
Yes, and, you know, me being on the board, I got to be in the first board meeting not long ago, and I was just so impressed with the staff of the Judson Center, and I just felt like they were so welcoming, and I think it's going to be just a wonderful partnership. And like I said, I feel the compassion and the caring from Cam, and I just think, you know, the energy was just great. So I'm really excited about it, too. So anyway, Cam, what about the children in our community? What can you tell us about what's happening with them and what they need right now?
Well, and every year there's a, and it's been done now for, I think, over 23 years, there's a kids count book that comes out nationally by the Annie Casey Foundation. It's broken down by state and by state, even by county and by municipality. But I'll stay at a very high level for the state because I think that's the easiest way for us to vision this right now for Michigan. Mm-hmm. But and, you know, and this is done in partnership with the Michigan League of Policy and Michigan Children's, both two nonprofit organizations who are committed and dedicated like we are to advocate for the needs of Michigan's children and their families. So, and, you know, over, and the data is a little dated, so I'm going to use some of the department data, too, with the Department of Human Services, which in the state of Michigan is responsible for child welfare programs. And there's, but they both agree on this. There's about 33,000 children in Michigan's child welfare system in terms of who's victims of abuse and neglect. That means that there's confirmed victims of abuse and neglect every year. Out of that, about 14,000, and it bounces around a little bit. It's actually been declining, which is nice. About somewhere between 13 and 14 right now on any given day that are in out-of-home care, meaning that they have to be removed from their family's setting and sometimes, sadly, from their own community because to get a foster home, they have to be moved at some distance away from their local schools or from their friends and their other supports. And that's what we don't want, but sometimes, sadly, uh-huh. that still happens. And, mm-hmm. and those children... That rate is tied to child poverty, and according to that children's book, you know, child poverty is kids count book, child poverty's gone up about 28% in Michigan between, you know, the period that they were looking at, which is 2005 and 2011. The kids count book is a little dated, but what that means is that there's about one out of every 12 Michigan children who lived in a family investigated for child abuse or neglect. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
I mean, that's a staggering figure. And you know, and sadly, as Casey points out, it's these centers of concentrated poverty where particularly children are stressed. Centers of concentrated poverty where there aren't adequate schools, housing, there aren't food resources, the things that we take for granted, the privileges of family and neighborhood and community and healthy communities that often the rest of us in Michigan are able to benefit from. And the city of Detroit, and this is not too distant off from the Casey study report, indicated that 2/3 of the children in the city of Detroit were growing up in centers of concentrated poverty. Now, these are little boys and girls who, through no fault of their own, are having a tremendous – disadvantage in terms of transitioning into adulthood successfully. So what happens to these kids if they don't find permanency? What's the other research show us in terms of what happens to kids who age out of care and have not been adopted? And there's about, in any given day now, about 3,000. And these are some good figures. There's less kids in out-of-home care than there have been in the past. And there's actually less kids waiting for adoption who are available because we've done some great work here in Michigan getting kids more rapidly adopted and also keeping kids stable in their homes and working with their families, because when you get removed from your home and get dislocated, that in and of itself is a trauma. But anyway, kids who age out and have not had permanency or had resources, often the statistics are pretty staggering. Both Michigan State University and Wayne State did studies, and this is confirmed by national studies. There's the Jim Casey Foundation and the Michigan Youth Opportunities Initiative that largely deals with this nationally. Well, the results are that about half of them haven't finished high school, and in this information era, that means that you won't get a living wage job. The most frequent job they have is fast food. You can't sustain yourself. There's often periods of homelessness they experience. And then we get in this multi-generational cycle of poverty, impoverishment, abuse and neglect. And then another study, and I wouldn't say that this is nationally necessary, but this was a study done by Casey of prisoners. They found that 50% of the prisoners that they studied had been in the foster care system. So, you know, they age out and they fall out of the mainstream, and they get into trouble because they're troubled. And what a waste of human potential. Michigan's Children did a study not too long ago and said that for every child that didn't finish high school, the cost to the system was over $1.5 million. And, you know, the benefit was far better, because then if you finish high school and you're paying taxes, then the swing could be as high as $2 to $3 million that you're able to contribute versus draining $1.5 million. So, you know, it's kind of I don't like to think of it in economic terms, because, you know, having been a social worker and a business person, both my social work side always seems to dominate. I think about the loss of human potential, the loss of and these are our family members. This is our community. These are our children and families. These aren't strangers. These are people who we need to take a personal investment in. So, but it's either pay now or pay later, one way or the other. And I'd like to early intervene. And again, I could go on and on, but there's some great new programs. There's a waiver program that the state's launched to really identify and intervene to prevent children from entering foster care and to save families. That's been very effective. And there's many other family preservation programs. So I'll stop now.
That's okay.
And I want Elizabeth to have a chance to echo some of this.
That's great information. And we know from our results work on hunger, on trying to eliminate hunger and poverty, that they'll say 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 children all over the United States don't know whether they're going to eat today. But I'm assuming in Detroit itself, it's probably 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 that are food insecure. And, you know, we're just fighting for programs to help with that, including SNAP, which we'll talk about later. So Elizabeth,
Mary,
did you have anything?
If I could add to that, one of the statistics that I did was that of that 28% of young children who are in child poverty today, food assistance, 50, those qualifying for food assistance went up by 55%. According to the Michigan between 2005 and 2011, child poverty went up 28%, while young children qualifying for food assistance went up 55%.
Did you give a date on that? Did they give what that date was on when it went up from where to where?
2005 to 2011. So it's a little dated, and we've had an economic recovery, so it may have come down some. But, you know, that's a problem with Michigan Kids Count. The data lags. But I'm sure your SNAP speaker will have current data from the department on how many people are qualifying for food stamps and not. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Elizabeth, do you have anything else to say on that subject? Or do you have some specific, like, family stories? I'd love to hear your stories about how we've helped children and families. But did you have anything else about children in the community first?
Well, you know, just the fact that so many of us need to know these numbers, because I think, you know, we kind of have an overriding feeling that, you know, there is abuse and neglect out there, and, you know, everybody kind of realizes that, but I don't think that they understand, you know, how prevalent it is. I'm looking at one statistic that says one of every 12 Michigan children lived in a family investigated for child abuse or neglect.
I mean, there's a lot of families that they have no idea that they're there too.
So now if we need to, you know, we need to get the information out, and that's what we're going to work together at every opportunity, like this wonderful opportunity to talk to the people that are listening to us today. But Cam and I are going to go out there and anywhere that we can get on a soapbox to make people understand. You know, these children that are removed from their families, Mary, are state wards. Am I right, Cam? Mm-hmm. They are state wards.
They are. They're taken. Some are with relatives, but many of them are
state wards.
They're all state wards in terms of being being under the court jurisdiction and court supervision.
Right.
So we have a duty as a society.
Right. And we are the state. The last time I looked, we citizens are the state. We have a responsibility to these children. I mean, if we don't feel it morally, we should feel it as you know, Cam was giving us the statistics of what can happen, you know, if these kids don't graduate and get great jobs and or decent jobs. So anyway, but all right, so one part of this is to get the information out and the numbers out. But the other major part for me and Cam, I believe, is that we can change this, that it doesn't have to be all gloom and doom, that, you know, we have done amazing things. We have changed so many lives that are joyful today, and that's what, you know, Mary, keeps me going at this third act of my life, you know, because, yes, it is very upsetting to see what happens to some of these kids, but it's more exciting, much more exciting, to see the difference that we can make, particularly now that ChildSafe and Judson are hand-in-hand in supporting these children. I mean, we have stories, and you know them. I'll just share two quick ones with you of a brother and sister that were taken from their biological home. I believe it was at age 4 and 2 that were found outside in the trash looking for food because they were starving. Now, that little girl and her brother were separated and put into two different foster homes. The brother, the little girl was doing okay in the foster homes because she was very young. But the brother, even at 4 and 5, felt a huge loss in leaving his sister behind because even at that little age, he felt he was responsible for her and that he had to find food for her and take care of her. So you know that little boy had multiple placements in foster homes because even at 5 and 6, he was a terror. He was very unhappy and very destructive and just, you know, was just dying inside. So we found out that there was a sibling, because the little girl was in one of our foster homes, and we reunited the siblings, okay? And we had a wonderful foster family who, you know, now has 5 children. When they adopted our first kid, or when they took our first foster child, they had no children. They were told they couldn't have children. Well, that's another beautiful story. But anyway, so we brought the brother and sister together. Now, the brother was still very distressed. And it took 6 months to turn him around. And the foster mother said there were many times that she was going to call and say that this was beyond her capabilities. But because of all the extra support that we gave her from ChildSafe, with all our foster care people and our child welfare people and our, you know, and our mentors and all of the above, that child finally, after 6 months, she said it was like a light bulb went off in his head. And he calmed down, and he realized that he was loved, and he wasn't going to be thrown out of that house, and he and his sister could be there together. And it's a beautiful story that, you know, they adopted both of those children and then had their own biological children and then took more foster child from us and adopted that child. And then one other quick story. So that's a, you know, those are the things we live for, and they are doing extremely well. Another very tragic one, which you also know about, was the 2 4-month-old twins that came to us with broken limbs and human bite marks, and we placed them into this wonderful family, And, you know, they're doing great today, absolutely great. They're starting school. And these are, like I said, horrific instances, but we can turn them around with community support. We had to go out there and raise additional funds so that we could do all of the extra things and give the therapy and make sure that, you know, kids that our kids, our foster care children, when they go to school, feel just as good as all the other kids in class, that their clothes are the same, nice and clean, and that they can take, you know, participate in sports and all the other things that the other kids do. Now, that takes funds, and that's what we're out there raising all the time through our events and hopefully donations to be able to support these children so they can come around the other end. And the stories can go on, as well as you know, but those are two of the ones that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, it just makes all the difference when you see what happens and you just feel the joy. It's you know, you're trying to give help and you're trying to give things to them, but even through mentoring and everything else, I feel like I and you and everyone that's involved feels just as much joy as the kids do for what we're able to do. And I know I've always liked the saying that Michael Bernard Beckwith says, which is, we only get to keep what we give away. And I think that we're giving as much as we can. And, you know, we still need help and we still need more foster families and mentors and funding. And I think you guys together are going to do a wonderful job to make more of that happen. And so thank you for that. As far as in general and things you might want to still say before we close, Cam, do you have anything you'd like to get into?
Well, I was just very touched, and always when I hear the stories, and Elizabeth does such a marvelous job of portraying, you know, the restoration and the recovery that we can do with children. I do think that there's often a misbelief that you have to be a super parent to be a foster parent, and I just want to say that you just need to be a loving, caring, dedicated member of our community, and we can help you. We have special resources and assets. We will see that your adventure is one that is rewarding and fulfilling, and we will be with you through thick and thin. And with that, I'm going to defer to Elizabeth to shout out hopefully the information about how to connect us, because we need, and if you don't feel you can make a time commitment, you can vote with your wallet, because I'll tell you, we could use your funds too to help get things that kids today need that we all come to expect.
Yeah.
You know, at the holidays, I was once struck when the kids would ask for things like underwear and toothpaste and coats and things that our kids take for granted. So let me let Elizabeth share with you how to get a hold of us.
Yeah, I'm going to give you that info. We have the ChildSafe website and we have the Judson Center website. www.judsoncenter.org is a great place to start, or the ChildSafe Michigan spelled out. .org as well. And the phone number here at the Judson Center, which can, you know, take you over to ChildSafe or you can talk to people here, is 248-549-4339. And if there are some people out there that are interested in mentoring, call ChildSafe. And, you know, children with a mentor are 45% less likely to use illicit drugs, and 59% more likely to do well academically. Those are huge numbers. A mentor makes all the difference in the world. One caring individual, whether it's the right foster family, obviously the right adoptive family, or the right mentor, changes a child's life forever. And, you know, that little saying on my porch, Mary, you know, in 100 years it's not going to matter how many cars you had or how big your bank account was. It's going to matter whether you made a difference in the life of a child. Thank you for your time, Mary.
You bet, Mary. Thank you for helping us put the light back into the far too often darkened eyes of children who, through no fault of their own, have faced unmanageable terrors and help strengthen their families. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And I also wanted to say, Elizabeth, I know that, you know, some of the other ways that we've helped foster families is if a child needs braces or if a child needs equipment, like he's playing a sport or therapy or things like that, and we've been there to help them. what to make sure that those kids have what they need and aren't looked down on by other kids in the school or whatever. And so I just
well, you know, that's why I think our foster families, you know, people are thinking about fostering, they should be thinking about us. Because they not only get the child, they get the extended family of Judson and Child Faith. Mm-hmm. So, and we're serious about that. So that's a real biggie. That's a biggie. Thanks, Mary.
And I know there's what, like, you know, 24/7 help on the phone, and there's respite care, and there's all kinds of different things that to help and support these foster families. And so it's not something where you're just out there and you don't have any help. You can get all the help you need. And the mentoring program is fabulous. I've been doing it for 3.5 years. You get great training on what to do and what not to do, and they give you great things to participate in with your kids, like free Pistons tickets or zoo or, you know, all different things that come up that are events that you can take your mentee with you on. And maybe you and Cam could talk a little bit about things that might be coming up as far as ways to for the organizations to make money, like what might be coming up that people could participate in. Is there anything right
well,
now?
Well, I have, like, you know, the Child Faith biggest fundraiser of the year is our gala, which is June 6th. If anybody is interested in tickets for that or to volunteer, please call Child Faith, and that's a huge fun event this year. It's called Detroit Legends, and we're celebrating sports legends and manufacturing and business legends, industrial legends, and entertainment legends. And so it's a year to celebrate Detroit. Let's bring it back. And the biggest part of bringing back Detroit is to secure the children in safety and comfortable, yes, you know, areas to grow in. Thank you.
And if we have any golfers that turn to a little different venue, we have on July 20th Judson Centers for the kids for golf outing. It's held at beautiful and Franklin Hills Private Country Club. Not many people get to golf it, and we have both a morning flight and an afternoon flight, and it's a phenomenal day of fun, but most importantly, of inspiration, of knowing that you can make a difference and save a child or children every day and strengthen their families.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both for all you do. You're doing a great job. And
thank you.
Any time you need have something else happen that you want to come on to talk about this, we'll have a link to this that everyone can put out to as many people as they know. And I just wanted to say, if you go on the archives of Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, We Get Results, there's another show totally on child abuse and bullying that I got help from Child Safe Michigan. That's in April of 2013 in the archives. And another show on mentoring through Child Safe Michigan, which was December of 2012. So if people are interested in looking at some more information, you can get some more then. So thank you guys again. Anything else you want to say before
Mary.
You go?
No, have a great
okay.
day, everybody. Remember the kids.
Okay. You too. Thanks so much for all you're
Hi,
doing.
Thank you.
We love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Right back at you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, I think we've got most of the website information out and further information, phone number to call. And if anyone has any questions about this, you can also email me at malbertson05@aol.com. Or call me at 248-756-6270 if you want some other information. So we're going to go on to the second part of our program now, which really has a lot to do with the kids that are having difficulty and possibly abused and neglected because their parents may not have the funds to feed them. So we want to talk a little bit about that, and we're going to go to my friend and person that helps all of us volunteers with results, Josh Lynn, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before I introduce him. And first of all, I've been a results volunteer or a volunteer citizens lobbyist for 12 years. I've lobbied on the Hill 8 different years. We have an international conference in D.C., and I've been there about 8 times. And we also go and have meetings with our congresspeople in the House and the Senate when they're in district, when they have their breaks and are at home. So I've done a lot of that, and Josh is a big help with the Results Volunteers. He's the grassroots manager for U.S. poverty campaigns at Results, and he manages support and supports our national network of U.S. poverty volunteers, providing them resources and support in their work to end poverty in America. He also engages and trains new volunteer activists in Results, oversees the Results U.S. Poverty Free Agents Group, trains groups on advocacy and anti-poverty public policy, and writes the Results U.S. Poverty Weekly email update. And he's been with Results since 2006. But before that, he was a school administrator in Kansas City, a government attorney in Phoenix. He received his B.S. in political science in German in 1990 from William Jewell College. And he also received his Juris Doctorate in 1993 from Drake University Law School and in Des Moines, and a Master's of Business Administration from the University of Kansas in 2002. Man, Jeff, you were busy learning so many things. And he lives in Des Moines, Iowa now with his wife, Laura, and daughter, Stella, and dog, Charlie. So, Josh, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me, Mary?
Yes, I can hear you fine. You've been busy in your work life here.
Yeah.
And,
a lot of education and a lot of debt.
Oh, yeah, there's that. But anyway, no, so... you've helped a lot of us volunteers. You help us know what to do and how to handle meetings and go to meet with our congressional representatives, because we are really their boss. We elect them. We can fire them by not voting for them. And a lot of them actually have said to us, you know, we look forward to you coming. You're a lobbyist, but you're coming for something other than your own financial gain. So we enjoy seeing you. Some of them may not say that, but most of them say that. And sometimes you just elect us, and then you don't tell us what you want us to do. So we're figuring we're the ones that need to tell them what to do, right, Josh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the election process is just the beginning of our civic engagement. If we don't let them know what we want, then somebody else surely will.
Yes, they will. How many? Do you remember how many paid lobbyists for each member of Congress?
Oh,
like,
you know, that's a good question. I can't remember that figure. It was a crazy number a few years ago, but I haven't heard a recent one.
Yeah. So do you want to say a couple words about Results in general and then talk about SNAP?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, as Mary's probably described on this show before, you know, Results, you know, we are a grassroots-based organization working to build the political will to end poverty. And, you know, I really enjoy working for Results and volunteering. I'm a volunteer in my local group here in Iowa, and it really is an empowering experience to learn that you can do all these things to impact legislation at the highest levels of government. You know, when I got involved with Results 9 years ago, I had no idea that I could do any of this stuff. I didn't know I could request a meeting with a member of Congress or, you know, have a conversation or get to know an editorial writer at my local paper, none of that stuff. And I've done all those things and many more just because of what Results has taught me. And you know, when you take responsibility for that stuff, then you realize you have a lot more power than you think you do.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So we have some big threats to one of our best programs domestically to help people who are in need of that are in hunger and poverty and need food. And why don't you tell us about SNAP and what exactly it is and why it's so important?
Sure, absolutely. Well, if folks are not familiar with the term SNAP, it stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and it's the relatively new name for the food stamp program, which has been around for decades, but they renamed it back in 2008 to SNAP. And SNAP really is our first line of defense against hunger in the United States. It is, you know, critically important for so many individuals and families around this country just to literally put food on the table. Currently, there are over 45 million people each month who are getting SNAP benefits. And these are not, you know, huge benefits. The average nationally for a SNAP benefits is about $1.42 per person per meal. So you're talking, you know, about $5 a day per person in SNAP benefits. And so certainly not enough to live high on the hog by any means, but really critically important. You know, one of the most effective programs at lifting people out of poverty has been shown to help children improve their health outcomes, improve, you know, reduce hunger in children, which is, you know, not only helps them, you know, in the present, but it really has long-term effects down the road. You know, when you're healthier as a child, you're going to be healthier as an adult. And if you're healthier as an adult, that means you work more and contribute to society, you know, and in a healthier way. And those are things that are really important. And SNAP is really, you know, one of the ways that we do that by providing these benefits to people around the country. And, you know, there are a lot of myths about, you know, what people can buy, whether you can't buy cigarettes, you can't buy alcohol, anything like that. But it really allows people who just don't earn enough money at their jobs to pay for all their utilities to be able to go to the grocery store and get some food to feed themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, you know, they were talking earlier about kids, and the only jobs they could get were the jobs like at McDonald's, but I think there was some stat that was sort of like maybe the average age of someone now working at McDonald's was like something like 28. Because
yeah, it's
those
getting
people
older.
Find jobs. They can't
absolutely
find jobs. And if they work more, they have to work two or three jobs. One job
absolutely
is not enough.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Great Recession from 2007, 2009, shedded a lot of jobs and replaced them with lower paying jobs. And so you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. People who were, you know, making, you know, a decent wage and now forced to take less pay and maybe work two or three jobs at once just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm. And some people just don't understand it. I know I had something that I put up on Facebook, and even one of my relatives said, what are you talking about? Those McDonald's jobs, those are supposed to be like for teenagers when you get out of high school. And I said, maybe that's what they used to be, but now there's like three people for every one job, and people that are older are having to take that job. They have no choice. And
absolutely,
without raising the minimum wage, it's been even worse. So I don't think people really understand exactly how much pressure parents are to try to get food for their kids. And like I said, I think there's a that we're saying 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 are food insecure, but I think in the Detroit area it's probably 1 in 3 or even more than that.
Yeah, yeah. It nationally it's about 1 in 5 children that are food insecure, and so you know, and frankly, that's kind of a crime that you know in the most prosperous country in the world that 20% of our children are struggling to eat, you know, or to get a nutritious diet, and it's, you know, we can do much better than that. And certainly, you know, SNAP contributes to keeping that number lower. If we didn't have SNAP, it would be significantly higher. But we absolutely have to do more. And unfortunately, the current Congress is you know, the direction they're going is to make things worse, not better.
Right. Yeah, we met with one member of Congress, and he said that he thought that they were going to try to cut up to, I think he said, $80 billion out of SNAP, and actually they really want to get rid of the whole thing altogether. And I just don't understand that. I don't understand why they don't see it. And we, you know, we bring along our information and our research, and what is it, like 1 to 2% fraud only out of SNAP? It's one of the best programs we've got.
Absolutely, and there are a lot of myths out there about SNAP, and you know, they're certainly perpetuated and used to fuel these attacks on the program. But actually, SNAP is a model of what a government program should be like. Like you said, the fraud rate, you know, people selling SNAP benefits illegally is 1%. The accuracy rate of making sure the right person gets the right amount of benefits is at 96%. I mean, if SNAP was a corporate program with a 96% accuracy rate and a 1% fraud rate, you know, it would be held up as the model of efficiency. But because it's a government program, you know, it's constantly attacked. And unfortunately, I think that a lot of this is just ideologically driven. You know, there may be some people that have legitimate beefs with the way the program is structured, but I think a lot of it is just they don't like government programs. They don't like the fact that government pays for any of this stuff, and so they would rather, you know, see these programs cut dramatically or eliminated altogether and have, you know, charities and food banks and food pantries try to solve the problem. Unfortunately, I think a lot of these people who make those accusations and make those claims have never actually talked to the food banks and the food pantries to understand what kind of pressure they're under already. They are barely keeping up with demand as it is, and they feel a significant jump in need every time there's some kind of cut to SNAP. And they certainly, I would think, would do not want to have to be the sole, you know, take sole responsibility for eliminating hunger in their communities. And you know, and it's just SNAP just works better. There are some things that the government does better than the private side.
And a lot of times I know that a lot of the officials or Congress or whoever will say, well, you know, that should be taken care of by churches and religious organizations. But those organizations are hurting really bad, even trying to keep themselves open now. It's just unbelievable what I've heard about, you know, different churches all around and closing and all that kind of stuff. And that was a very small, you know, part anyway. But, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the current budget that they're proposing in the House would cut SNAP by $125 billion. And that's actually a little bit lower than what they had been proposing the last few years. And to going to that point you just mentioned, you know, when Bread for the World, who's a strong ally of Results and works on these issues as well, you know, when Paul Ryan, who used to be the chair of the House Budget Committee, did his budget a couple of years ago, and it proposed about $160 billion in cuts to SNAP, Bread for the World did an analysis. Okay, if churches had to pick up the slack for that $160 billion in cuts, and this is just that amount of cuts, it's not eliminating the program altogether, just $160 billion over 10 years, and they did an analysis. They found out that every single church in the United States would have to raise an additional $50,000 per year for 10 years to cover that cut. And, you know, like you said, churches are struggling just to stay open as it is. And I don't think, you know, these churches are looking to add $50,000, you know, expense to their annual budget that they need to raise to pick up these, to pick up the slack. And Brad did another has another statistic that shows, you know, at right now, for every 20 bags of groceries that are provided, you know, and you know, to help people in need, only one of those is provided by private charities. You know, the rest of it comes from federal or state, you know, food programs, nutrition programs. So, you know, these programs are absolutely critical for families. And to propose cuts, especially to a program that's so effective like SNAP is just, you know, just beyond imagination, in my opinion.
Are there any other things that you'd like to add about the misconceptions by the media or Congress about SNAP? Or have we done
that? Oh, sure. You know, they claim that it's, you know, they claim that, you know, that it's got this high fraud rate, and I already talked about that. Another one is that whole SNAP spending has skyrocketed in the last few years. And it's true, SNAP spending has increased dramatically over the last 15 years. But what has happened over that time? You know, in 2000, when President Clinton left office, that's where the lowest amount of SNAP, you know, enrollment was in the recent past. It was about 17 million people per month were getting SNAP benefits, and now we're up to 46 million. Well, since then, poverty has been increasing slowly since 2000, and then what happened in 2007? We had a huge recession, which sent huge amounts of people into poverty because they lost their job or their pay got cut and things like that, and so people needed the program, and so that's why enrollment jumped. And that's really kind of the beauty of how SNAP works, is that it's designed, specifically designed, to expand when the economy is bad and then contract when things get better. And that's exactly what's happening now. Now that the economy is slowly getting better, not as fast as we would like, but it's slowly getting better, SNAP enrollment is actually starting to go down and will go down significantly over the next 10 years, assuming the economy continues to get better. And that's really why it's been so effective.
The one thing, too, about that is that people will say is, oh, my gosh, they just, you know, people don't want to work. They'll stay on SNAP for their whole lives. And I feel like the statistic was something like the average time on SNAP was 8 to 9 months. Does that sound
absolutely
right to you?
Yeah, about 8 to 10 months that people go on SNAP. And people forget that the majority of people on SNAP are people who can't work. They're either children.
Right.
And children is generally the largest beneficiaries of SNAP. They're people who are have physical disabilities and can't work, and they're the elderly. And so, you know, generally, just depending on your state, that roughly that those three range from 60% to 75% of SNAP recipients. And for those who are able to work, you know, usually between 40 to 50% of them are actually already working. And simply because someone's not working doesn't mean they're not looking for work. But it's you know, when you're relying on $5 a day for food for yourself, you know, I don't think that people are quitting their jobs just to go on SNAP to see a significant pay cut from their low SNAP benefits.
No, for sure. So what do you think as far as the new threats to SNAP and what listeners could do? We've got about 5 minutes left. What would you say would be something good for us to know?
Well, certainly, you can let your legislators know, your members of Congress know that you oppose these attacks on SNAP. You know, remind them of the effectiveness of the program, how important it is to children and families. In addition to our economy, you know, SNAP benefits help spur the local economy. People get those benefits and they spend them, and so that's good for the local economy. So remind them how important this program is and urge them to oppose these cuts to SNAP. You know, we just finished a farm bill, the beginning of 2014, where they already cut SNAP by almost $10 billion over the next 10 years. And so we don't need to be cutting SNAP even further and putting even further hardship on folks. And so letting them know that you oppose these cuts. Another thing that you can do, you know, members of Congress are going to be on recess starting the end of this week for 2 weeks. And so if you live in an area where they're going to be doing town halls and public events, go and tell them, you know, you want them to protect the SNAP program and oppose these cuts. You can also work to get media published, letters to the editor and op-eds in your local paper saying, you know, we need to protect SNAP. We need to preserve this program and make sure that we're doing our best to reduce hunger in the United States. And those are all actions that you can take through the Results website at results.org that we have available. You can use online resources, or we have guides that you can, you know, do your own personal letters or personal letters to the editor.
And being able to see them in person, you know, there was just an open house for one of the members of Congress's office, and I found out about that, and she put it out on Twitter, or you can look at their Facebook page or their website and find out when they are going to be somewhere. And if you're a constituent, you know, you tell them you're a constituent and you are really their boss, and this is something very, very important. And if you can get 5 or 10 people to try to call the office or email around the same time, they will really look at it and talk to their boss, because there's constituents in a group that are saying so much, or even by yourself, you know, it's still a great idea. But you can go in and ask them questions at any of these town hall meetings or coffees or things like that, and they can find out their member of Congress on the Results website, right, Jeff?
Absolutely. On the Results website, if you look under our U.S. Poverty Actions and News page, you'll see a link there that says research your members of Congress and their staff, and you can find out contact information for them and all kinds of information about them. But, you know, and it goes back to the first point that you made when I came on was, you know, when we elect people or, you know, when people get elected, whether you vote for them or not, if you don't tell them what you want them to do, then somebody else will. And, you know, letting your voice be known to them and letting them know what you care about and what you want them to do, that's your job as a citizen. You know, they take guidance from you. As Harry Truman used to say, we're the sovereigns, not them. And if we want them to do the right thing, then we have to tell them. And certainly talking to them face-to-face is the best way to do it. And I will say, if anybody has questions about this or would like help with asking questions or writing a letter to the editor or something, you know, please feel free to email me at jlinn@results.org. That's jlinn@results.org.
Yeah, good idea. And just, you know, go on the website and look around and see everything and all the successes we've had at www.results.org. And also people can call me if they have questions, too. So anything you want to leave us with, Jeff? Or
just want to thank you for all your great work, Mary. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and hear about the wonderful things that y'all are doing. I saw pictures from y'all's face-to-face meeting a couple of weeks ago there in Michigan, and look forward to seeing you in D.C. this summer. But, you know, thanks to everybody who's listening, you know, for paying attention and really wanting to get educated on these issues. And if results can help you take action on them, we're happy to do that.
Yes, for sure. And think about the international conference in D.C. Our Michigan group lobbied 14 Michigan congressional offices in 2 days. And you learn all about what to do. They teach you everything. Once you go on the results website, you can see the new person calls that they have to tell you ways to be effective in lobbying your congresspeople. And there's help everywhere. So just let us know if you need any help. And the international conference is July 18th to 21st. And I think that's the only other thing I was going to say. So thanks for being on, Jeff. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening in, and I hope that you will think about these organizations and see what you can do to make a difference, because you can. Every person can make a difference. And thank you so much. Take care. Talk to you next month. Bye.